This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, August the 17th. I'm Angela Denning. When it came to the federal races, Tuesday's election results held no surprises. As expected, Senator Lisa Murkowski easily beat three lesser-known Republican candidates. On the Democratic side, candidate Ray Metcalf was well ahead of Edgar Blatchford, with about half the vote counted. Murkowski's more formidable challenge may come from independent candidate Margaret Stock. Stock has already raised $500,000 for her campaign and is seeking to get on the November ballot by petition. Congressman Don Young had no trouble in his race yesterday. The incumbent had a huge lead over three other Republicans. None of Young's primary challengers raised enough money to file campaign finance reports. Democrat Steve Lindbeck, though, has raised serious money to challenge Young. Lindbeck, a former general manager of Alaska Public Media, easily won his primary challenge on Tuesday. Unofficially, the statewide voter turnout was about 15%. In House District 35, which includes Petersburg and 13 other precincts, the unofficial turnout was a lot less, at about 5%. There was little opposition on the local ballots. On the Republican ticket, Sheila Finkenbinder of Sitka ran unopposed for House District 35, receiving 627 votes. On the Democratic ticket, incumbent Jonathan Kreis Tompkins ran unopposed, receiving 648 votes. The two will be facing off in the general election in November. A pilot who crashed his float plane on the shore of a lake on Prince of Wales Island shortly after takeoff was rescued Monday by a U.S. Coast Guard crew. Coast Guard's 17th District Command Center watch standards say they received an electronic locator transmitter alert Monday evening for a Piper Tri-Pacer floatplane. The transmitters instantly alert responders when there's a crash and provide GPS coordinates to assist in finding a downed aircraft. According to the Coast Guard, watch standards contacted Ketchikan Flight Service Station personnel, who reported that they last talked with the pilot at 5:15 p.m., but lost contact shortly after. A Sitka helicopter crew then was launched to the search. The helicopter crew located the wreckage, hoisted the man, and transported him to the Ketchikan Airport, where he was met by emergency medical services personnel. No serious injuries were reported, and the response was officially closed by 10:30 p.m., according to the Coast Guard. The Petersburg School Board held a meeting about the upcoming school year. The meeting was short, lasting less than an hour. A lot of the time was designated to the maintenance department, which works throughout the summer. Board members heard a report on how much money the district has been saving on electricity and fuel in recent years. District Maintenance Director Dan Tate presented some of the projects that have been completed over the summer. He says a lot happened.
It's one of the more difficult summers that I can remember in terms of scope of work required and the difficulty of the work that we had to do.
But Tate says his current maintenance department was up to the task.
My crew made this possible.
Classrooms were prepared for teachers, which included new paint and cabinetry in some cases. The construction team put in a rock garden in front of the Stedman Elementary School to solve a drainage problem. Also at the elementary, the playground landscaping timbers were removed for safety reasons, and outdated equipment was removed for future expansion. And the school's cafeteria dishwashing station was rebuilt. In the high school, a new office area was built for the special ed instructor because the classroom was moved across the hall. New service windows were installed in the middle school office. New carpet was installed in the hallways and the offices of the combined high school and middle school. The gym floor had its annual refinish, and work began on the new floor for the high school cafeteria. Contractors also installed new LED lights in the high school shop and in the weight room. Tate also shared new information he's been compiling about the school district's fuel and electrical usage. Using multiple graphs, he compared the last 3 years. The blue line represented 2014, and the green, 2015. The red one was this past year.
What we have here, if you look at the red and the green, we've got a pretty predictable data going here. Mm-hmm. And granted, you know, we've had some pretty mild winters, and we get some really cold weather. We're going to see some spikes, and that's to be expected. But I think we can utilize this data really well between Karen and Erica and I to really predict where we should be putting our budget money in the coming years as long as we keep maintaining this data. Mm-hmm.
Karen is the finance director for the district, and Erica, the superintendent. The data shows that the remodel at the elementary school brought a sharp decline in fuel usage and cost to the district.
It's 50% less fuel from when we did the remodel.
The elementary used 24,000 gallons of fuel oil in 2014. That dropped to about 11 and 12 gallons the last 2 years. The middle and high schools also used less fuel the last 2 years. Tate says that's because the schools were each running 30-year-old boilers back in 2014. Since then, one of the boilers has been replaced, and another one is being installed this week. The other reason, he says, is because the schools stopped heating the whole building all the time. Starting in the spring of 2014, the schools went from about 3 to 12 separate zones. That means now only certain parts of the building are heated as needed.
So, for instance, tonight, this room and the band room, I think, are the only two rooms running on that particular system, and the rest of the school shut down.
Back in 2014, the middle and high schools used 53,000 gallons of fuel. In 2013, it was 36,000, and last year it was 33,000 gallons. As for electrical use, the middle and high school had an 11% reduction between 2015 and 2016. Tate says some of the savings came from the efficient LED lights that were installed in the gym. At the grade school, there was a slight decrease in electricity from 2015 to last year. The data didn't show electrical use for 2014, before the school's renovation. The school district also pays for the electricity for the community gym and the aquatic center. It's part of a shared use agreement, so the school district can use the facilities. For the pool, in 2015, the school district spent $137,000 in electricity. In 2016, it was $145,000. The pool uses electric boilers. For the community gym, the school district pays about $10,000 a year for electricity. The first day of school for students is Monday, August 29th. There will be staff in service August 22nd through the 25th. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. The bells at St. Michael's Orthodox Cathedral in Sitka are ringing again after a temporary hiatus. Thanks to a new deacon with musical abilities and no fear of heights, you'll hear them ringing most days at 11:55. KCAW's Catherine Rose spent some time with Deacon Herman Madsen to find out more about his bell-towering achievement.
Do you hear that? Those are the bells of St. Michael's, and they haven't been played for a while. That is, until Deacon Herman Madsen showed up.
I always use the example of a medical field. So, like, you have the priest is like a doctor, and the deacon's like a nurse to the doctor.
He and his wife Mary moved here at the beginning of the summer to help with tours at the church and assist Father Michael. It wasn't always Herman's plan to work for the Russian Orthodox Church, though.
And I was a wild child. I grew up with my grandmother. My mom and my dad sort of abandoned me as a child. And so my grandmother, at 70, took care of a young baby. I nearly ended up in jail, but then my grandfather stuck his neck out for me. And I ended up at a young men's Orthodox Christian academy in Kodiak called St. Innocent's Academy.
Deacon Herman spent 11 years at the academy. He debated joining the seminary for quite a while, but didn't fully commit to the idea until he had an experience at the tomb of St. Herman in Kodiak.
All of a sudden, right next to this tree where St. Herman's hut and house used to be, it was like incense just started pouring out of the ground, and the smell of St. Herman's relics surrounded me.
Deacon Herman says it smelled of roses. It was unmistakably a religious calling.
You know, I just hit the deck, and I was like, well, I really need to go to seminary. I don't have any choice at this point.
He has been in the seminary for 3 years. Though he has a background in music and performance, playing the bells was a new adventure.
When I got here, there was nobody really playing the bells at the time. So I just started taking it up and doing it every day at noon. I didn't take any official classes on bell ringing. Because of my background in singing and playing instruments at St. Innocent's Academy, I had an ear for that kind of thing. I also played the spoons.
So playing the bells wasn't too much of a stretch. There are 8 bells, a full octave, which makes it easier. But what does playing them entail exactly? Is he, like, swinging from rope to rope, Quasimodo style? I follow him to the bell tower to find out.
So you definitely get your exercise.
What is that? Was that four flights of stairs?
Five.
Oh, wow.
That's really nice on sunny days. Come up here, read a book. Very nice. Whew, okay.
We're both a little bit out of breath as he explains to me how the bells work. And the bells themselves have a pretty interesting story. They were originally made in Holland and ordered by the Russian-American company in St. Innocent. And they lasted all the way to 1966 when the fire broke out.
In the fire, these bells melted into clumps of metal. And the men in the community afterwards gathered up all the metal, had it resent back to the original foundry, which still had the original casts for these bells. And so these bells were recreated from the original metal that melted in the fire.
Each bell is connected to a string a bit thicker than a strand of yarn. Those strings connect to a podium with holes in it. The two largest bells are attached to two huge wooden pedals. And believe it or not, the deacon actually plays the bells a little bit like bongos.
Instead of pulling a string, I tap all the strings like a drum. And so that's why I can play them so fast and in so many different ways. And then that's why they sound so awesome. And you get some pretty awesome, exciting bell ringing that happens that gets you kind of pumped up. It's a lot of fun.
Fun and loud. Herman and his wife will leave Sitka at the end of the summer with plans to come back next year and hopefully make Sitka their home. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Many more University of Alaska students are seeking disability services each year. In 8 years, the number has quintupled at the University of Alaska Southeast. Some university staff believe the increase is tied to changes in a nearly 26-year-old federal law. KTO's Quentin Chandler has more from Juneau.
The Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, requires institutions receiving public money or providing a public service, like colleges, to offer a level playing field for people who have disabilities. In 2008, the Act was amended to expand the definition of disability. That fall, 23 University of Alaska Southeast students were using disability services. By the spring semester of this year, there were 119. The upward trend is true at the Universities of Alaska Anchorage and Fairbanks, but it's not as dramatic. Margie Thompson is the coordinator of counseling and disability services for the UAS campus in Juneau. She thinks there are a couple of reasons for the increase, including the amendment to ADA.
Which includes a lot more other hidden disabilities or temporary disabilities. We also have better psychotropic meds, and people who may have been ruled out for college because of a mental health issue are now able to go.
Thompson says hidden disabilities are conditions that aren't easy to see, like mental health conditions, medical issues, or learning disabilities like dyslexia. She says students' temporary disabilities are usually the result of injuries, surgeries, and other short-term medical conditions. She was a one-person office when she started in disability services the year the ADA amendment passed. 3 years ago, the campus hired another person, part-time, to help out.
For me, it was awesome. I guess I've been a disability rights advocate for a long time. It's been a little tricky sometimes working with all the services in the university. It's involved more collaboration with facilities for physical accommodations.
Tracy Taylor works in the Juneau campus's IT department and is considering going to graduate school. She graduated from UAS in May with a degree in marine biology. Thompson says Taylor struggles with a disability that might not have been covered by ADA before the 2008 amendment.
Anxiety. I just very stressed out and have a hard time keeping things straight in my head, and my mind just trails from one thing to the next thing as the list of things just keep piling up, and it's really stressful.
Taylor says a couple of her teachers did notice her struggling and recommended she go to the Disability Services office. She did. She came in, and the staff recommended she use a LiveScribe pen, which recorded lectures for her.
It's great to be able to go back and listen to whatever I missed during that time. And I started proctoring, having my exams proctored, so that it was just a quieter location and there wasn't as much noise distraction and I could focus better on the exam.
Test proctoring is just one disability service the university system provides. Taylor says her test scores improved and school got easier. She encourages other students who think they might have a disability to speak up and get help.
Students entering the university system now grew up with the ADA.
That's Doug Toley with Access Alaska, an independent living center and advocate for the disabled based in Anchorage. He's got other theories for the increase.
ADA was passed in 26 years ago in 1990, and so they've maybe grown up with expectations that previous students didn't have for accommodation.
Additionally, Toley says there are likely more veterans with hidden disabilities coming into Alaska's universities. According to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, more than 73,000 veterans were living in Alaska between 2013 and 2014. No matter the reason for the increase, Thompson says it's a good thing. She believes it's a community-wide responsibility to accommodate diversity. University officials couldn't produce dollar figures for what it costs to provide these services right away. However, citing fear of violating the ADA, they requested an additional $250,000 for disability services earlier this year. The legislature denied it. In Juneau, I'm Quentin Chandler.
KFSK has an open airwaves policy. We encourage the public to express opinions, ideas, and creative works, which will be available on our website, kfsk.org, following the scheduled radio broadcast. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KFSK. The following has been submitted for broadcast by Mary Coppice.
Hi, Petersburg. This is Mary Coppice, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Board of Directors of The Market. This month, The Market wraps up its seventh year, celebrating the creativity, diversity, and talent in our small town through our bi-monthly community-centered events held throughout the summer here in Petersburg. While the vendors who create the handmade and homegrown specialties found at every event are the heart and soul of this organization, there has always been a dedicated group of individuals behind the scenes who help to organize and support the events each year. Right now, we are in need of a few new volunteers to join the board to help with planning and development for the future of The Market. If you love The Market and want to help this great community tradition to grow and bloom, please consider joining. We need your help, and it only requires a few hours each month. For more information, contact me, Mary Coppice, by phone at 518-1268 or Marius Metz by email at marjasmets@yahoo.com. Thank you.
KFSK encourages the public expression of opinions, ideas, and creative works. Views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KFSK. For information, please call General Manager Tom Abbott at 772-3808. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Dunning. Thanks for listening.